I'm Dean Newland, and welcome to the Business of Intuition, where I coach, facilitate, train, and speak on the hard science and meaningful experience of intuitive leadership in business, so you can make better decisions, forge real connections, and creatively solve problems to amplify your impact and simplify your life. Welcome to the Business of Intuition.
Why can't we just read a book and follow the steps and be successful? Why do we get hooked by our children, our mates, our friends, and involve ourselves in conflict that seems worthless? Why is it that teams don't follow the guiding principles that they themselves wrote? Why do leaders sometimes derail conversations and take it into an area that seems to be extremely self-serving? The answer to all those questions has something to do with a little word called ego. And ego is certainly a positive part of our personalities, but it also can get triggered and become something that derails our best intentions. If the human brain is only conscious of about 10%, therefore, 90% is unconscious and hidden. Therefore, as adults, we're walking around with mindsets and decisions and opinions about ourselves and others in the universe that we are not even conscious of. And therefore, we wonder why we are stumbling or having issues. My next guest on the Business of Intuition is an expert in ego management. And we had a fantastic conversation about how to be able to uncover this gnarly little thing called the ego in order to make it our friend and not our foe. In fact, those of you who are interested in this topic, go to Mission Facilitator's website, which is mfileadership.com, and go to our resource page where we have a lot of blogs and videos and ebooks on topics, some of which address this topic around ego. Christy Garcia is an ego management expert, as I said, a leadership coach, a speaker, facilitator, and founder of Mindful Choice Leadership Academy. She has 18 years experience in sales, recruiting, and coaching. And for the last 10 years, she has worked with current and upcoming leaders from fast-growing organizations, including Airbnb, Twitter, Movement for Life, and Sunrun. One of Christy's superpowers is helping her clients manage their ego and build authentic confidence so that they can show and be maximizing their skills so that they can become as successful as possible. Christy's modern approach is designed to be simple. You just have to choose to be 1% better every day. Christy's services include leadership development, executive and management coaching, co-founder relationship alignment, team building, communications training, and keynote speaking. Christy Garcia on the Business of Intuition. Christy, it's great having you on the show. I really appreciate your time. And I'm really curious about this topic. And this topic that I'd love to dive into with you is around ego management. You know, we've had a lot of guests on this show over the last couple of years, many of them having some sort of opinion about leadership and culture and communication, but nobody has really said, let's get right to the heart of the matter, ego. And so could you tell me why you sort of wrapped your practice around ego management and why we should really address leadership and communication from that vantage point?
Well, first, Dean, thanks for having me on your show. I'm excited to visit with you. I love what you're doing out there. And yeah, ego management, it's a fun topic. You know, one of the things that got me into it, my own ego showed up about 12 years ago. Obviously, it was there long before that. But I learned about it, identified it, and realized how it was sabotaging so much of my own life and success in a way that was kind of shadowed, right? Like the ego is, it's quiet and it's just that unconscious brain that makes us think we're happy, makes us think we're doing a great job. It makes us think that everything's okay or we're fine and that's okay too. So I really learned about the ego through my own work, my own personal development. As I was doing the work, I learned, holy moly, this is how leaders are failing in organizations and why they're failing. People don't know about the ego. They don't know that this unconscious brain is, you know, literally showing up in every conversation, every decision, every action. 98% of the time, we are unconsciously going through the motions. And when you can just put a simple language around it, you have an entire team or organization that now says, hey, this is an ego tactic. This is an ego conversation. This is an ego approach. We need to take a step back and revamp our conversation or change our approach to how we're dealing with it. And it really transforms how teams work together, how leaders show up, how we communicate as team members, the stress levels we carry, and how to manage all of it. So it's been a really fun journey. And
wow.
Yeah,
you just said a lot. I mean, like, let's take like five podcasts just to unpack what you just said. I'm going to start
one
with
bite at a time.
You know, one part of it that you mentioned, which I think is important, was that you sort of started saying that you were defining ego as the unconscious brain, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so those of you who are not, you know, seeing this, you know, Christy is doing an emphatic yes of the head. So if
yeah,
that's the case, what I'm inferring, and I'm also agree with you, is that a lot of, or maybe most of the decisions and behaviors that we will engage in and display are being run by that unconscious brain versus
correct.
The more conscious brain. So there's so much here. Is the unconscious brain necessarily always negative, meaning something that we should try to control, or kind of define the, I guess I'm going to start getting into things like triggers and hooks and things that might derail us in the unconscious
Absolutely.
Brain perspective when we get into making decisions. So unpack some of that.
So the unconscious brain, right? It's such a big high level word. Really what I mean by it are the beliefs and mindsets designed from childhood that have kind of designed how we digest information, how we react to certain people, how we show up in circumstances, how we respond to situations. Those beliefs, mindsets are our filter. They're good and bad. They don't necessarily, you know, always lean one way or another. It's knowing when do you cross over, and the ego, that unconscious mind, the one that says, hey, I don't like it, or I just took that comment personal and now I'm going to lash out and make my next response personal too, right? Where if you're conscious in that moment, now you get to say, hey, that's an interesting perspective. Maybe we should talk about that, versus the unconscious thing is just a reactive tendency built on those old school mindsets, beliefs, things that have happened to our life, past story. They don't necessarily serve us all the time. They did get us to where we're at though. So if you are successful today, which my gut is, if you're listening to this, you are some form of leader, some form of upcoming manager, someone that's wanting to improve yourself and continue to grow in that space, which means that you have had success in your life. Ego got you here. The ego is an I-driven motivator. Starting as a child, your ego shows up and you have to take care of yourself, right? So there's three types of ego. There's the controller, the complier, and the protector. As a child, if you, let's say you're the only child, and your entire life, you're praised. So at age two or three, you start learning, I'm the best. People love me. I do great, especially if I do really good things. And now that ego is 25 or 30, and you have done your whole life to be an overachiever, to prove that you're great, to prove that you're the best, ride that achievement train. And it's gotten you to really great places. You're now getting into, let's say, a relationship or a management role. Well, all of a sudden, it doesn't matter how good you are. You now have to be a wee player. And it's really hard for that ego to be a wee player. So shifting perspective, really that's where that unconscious brain is. Unconsciously got us here, now consciously leading you to that next chapter is where the success of that ego is going to play role in how you lead in your life, your relationship, and your business. So whatever it is that you're doing, this impacts all of it.
I love the three terms, the controller, complier, protector. That just all of a sudden...
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people just fell into my mind as I was hearing you say that. My assumption, tell me if I'm wrong or right, that we in our Western society sort of find that leaders who rise to the top, the egos that come with them are the controller. Correct or incorrect?
I would say the controller helps them get there, but I work with a lot of complier egos that are leaders and executives. I work with a lot of protectors. The trick is we all have all three. We tend to have one to two dominant, and that's when we typically cross over into the weaknesses that we become. Ideally, when we're our best self, we use all three egos, about 33%. That's kind of the sweet spot because their strengths to each ego, right? The complier ego empathizes. It's compassionate. It's kind. It cares about the people. The protector ego is high integrity, speaks truth, stands by its values, really does what's right and fair for everyone, even if it doesn't serve them. The controller is the one that's about achievement and results and getting to the finish line, making sure things are done and things are done quickly and effectively to get results. And so those, when you're thinking about a great leader, we need all three of those qualities, right? Or packages of skills. Now, the oversight, overuse, when we start to cross over that 33%, it's no longer strength, and it starts to become the unconscious ego. Because really, to use that 33%, you have to be pretty conscious and say, oh, this is the sweet spot. Now I need to kind of hold it back. The crossover, when it becomes, I need to be liked, is the complier. So everything is filtered through this lens that, oh, I have to take care of the people for myself, or I really don't want to hold them accountable because they're not going to like me. I don't want to hurt their feelings. Or, you know, I'm going to say yes when I really need to say no because I'm exhausted and burnout. So those are the compliers where they can kind of cross over into the negative. The protector typically is stubborn. They're black and white, right? Because they have such a strong value system. Everything is either right or wrong. And so their worth and value comes from being right. If someone challenges them, they want to get defensive. They could be very stubborn, my way or the highway. They're emotionally unattached to things, even though they have an emotional trigger, because they deep down, they're truly attached to what's right. And so, you know, again, that can sabotage their good impact of the integrity part and their truth. Then you've got the controller who, they'll get to the finish line. Biggest competitors want to win. The problem with them is a lot of times we get to the finish line without a team with us. So we're at the finish line by ourselves. And that's why I think a lot of leaders do find themselves when the ego is running their show. And it really doesn't matter if they're a controller, protector, or a complier. If your ego is running your show, your relationships probably have more drama in them. They probably are emotionally unconnected if you're on the controller protector side. If they are on the complier protector side, most likely they're too emotionally charged, too emotionally invested. So it's a pretty fun way to kind of look at just normal humans doing normal human stuff, but how it really impacts the business conversation in the boardroom.
So this is interesting. So it sounds like there are, the way you describe this model with the controller, the complier, the protector, that if you stay within that sweet spot, this is a strength, but if you go too far, this becomes a derailer or it goes into the negative as you described it. And so then what is it that sets that off? What causes us from going from, hey, this is a good appropriate amount of complier, protector, controller, whatever it might be, and now I've moved into something that's maybe not as very effective. What causes that flip?
Typically, emotion, change, anything that's just, you know, sets you into a reactive stance, which is everything. Let's be honest. You can walk into a gas station and someone looked at you wrong. It can trigger you to say, oh, I don't like that. And we respond. So really, it's that unconscious reaction that we all do within a second. And you are either conscious enough to catch that visceral feeling. So a lot of the work that I do is you have to first become very self-aware of what does the ego even feel like, so that when you do have that moment of unconscious reaction, you can recognize it. Whether your tendency is to lash out and get mean, or whether it's to quietly, you know, submit and just go along and get along. Like, typically those are the natural reactions that all of us do, or we take things personal, or we get emotional about something, or we just lash out or shut down completely. And so once we kind of know what is your visceral go-to, then you can catch it early. And that's when you can catch yourself in that conscious state and say, hey, why am I feeling this? Why does this matter? What's actually going on? And what is the purpose of the emotion? To then intentionally choose your next move, thought, or action. And that's the real magic to the ego management.
My sense is that most conflict is a conflict of style, not of meaning. Would you think that the conflict that would ensue between people is really when that ego has moved more towards a negative, and that we are trying to protect ourselves or control or what have you? That's what the conflict is about, not necessarily the topic at hand.
Absolutely. Usually it's the ego is responding to a perspective based on its own perspective instead of looking at it through a lens that, hey, they probably didn't mean anything negative by that statement. The ego does not assume any good intent, right? Automatically, the ego protects us. So it says, oh, danger, they don't have your back. They're out to get you. They're trying to be mean, whatever it is. So you're sitting in a room and a colleague says, I don't really like that idea. All of a sudden, it's no longer about the idea. They just said that you're not good enough. And it becomes a conversation that's really not relevant to the idea. I do a lot of co-founder coaching. And what I love the most about it is most often people respond with emotion because they care about something, right? And so when they care deeply about a topic or a situation or an idea, and the ego has been attached to it, it's really hard to be open and listen to new ideas or to hear feedback or to hear someone even question it. Just say, hey, I like the idea, but I'm concerned about this. Now, all of a sudden, it becomes a personal attack according to the ego. And so being able to help people recognize that one ego in the room will respond to everybody's ego in the room. So if someone gets just even a little defensive or says something even slightly dry, even if it was unintentional, which 99% of the time, ego work is unintentional, we start to really respond to it in a way that's just now under attack versus trying to align everybody. And once we can align everybody around a smooth conversation that is conscious, you can actually say, hey, I don't think you really meant to make me feel this way, but I can take ownership of my feelings and take responsibility for how I responded. And then we change the conversation. And so one person is conscious again and can intentionally identify what just happened in a room, they can now change the entire approach and manage everybody else's egos too. And that's really the power that happens when you start to really work with a group of people or a group of co-founders or business partners that are sitting there saying, we can't have a productive conversation. Everybody's too defensive. And the second you start calling out the egos, no one's defensive because it's not relevant. Like you said, you're not even arguing about the real topic. You're just arguing about certain symptoms of the topic that is brought up.
How do you do that, though? I mean, so you got a group of people in a meeting and somebody gets defensive. The defensiveness has to do with the fact that they got hooked or triggered. They got triggered because they're tired. They haven't slept. Somebody reminds them unconsciously of a situation that maybe took place long, long time ago. So now all of a sudden, I don't know why I'm feeling so pissed off at you.
Yeah.
But God darn it, do I ever. It doesn't make sense to me either, but I'm lashing out. How do we then call out the ego in order to neutralize it in this room that you just described?
That's such a great question. First and foremost, someone has to be conscious enough to do it, right? If an ego calls it out, you're just going to get more of that banter. When there's someone that is calm and has grounded themselves, first you have to slow down. You have to slow down and breathe because the ego thinks fast, it moves fast, it reacts fast. So if one person can slow down enough to slow down the room, it really just takes someone to say, hey, I feel like we're going down a bad path. Why don't we take a minute, take a breath, and figure out what's really going on? Or it seems like something I have said has triggered you. What actually happened there? Because I'm a little confused. Or, hey, my perspective obviously was unintentionally upsetting you. How can we talk through this, right? Again, it has to go back to ownership. If you just start, you know, yelling back, why are you being such a jerk? Which is typically what happens in ego-driven conversations is, oh, well, you just obviously are in a bad mood today, so I'm going to go. Why don't we talk about this later? Well, that's just an ego responding to an ego, right? Where if you then instead said, hey, you know, I feel like I really upset you. I'm sorry. That wasn't my intention. Can we talk about what's actually going on? Like now you just manage your ego, which can help someone else manage theirs because you just gave them permission to say what's actually going on versus I'm just angry. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. You know, you change the dynamic in the room, it changes everybody. That not a guaranteed, but it certainly will create that opportunity, that opening. All right. I think this is really important work that you're doing here, Christy. I want to ask you a question, but then I want to give you something that I tried recently and get your response to it. I believe personally that we are unconscious of a lot of longstanding mindsets that have helped us get here, but in some cases become the thing that holds us back.
Absolutely.
And that behavior doesn't change unless we change mindset. Otherwise, we would be the perfect weight, have the perfect parent, have the perfect kid, have the perfect house, have everything. Because there's been a book written about it all, right? We've got it out there. I've got hundreds of books on stuff. You do too. If I just did them, I would be as successful as the author. But the reason why I don't do is because my mindset doesn't align with that behavior. I got something that's counter to that. So if all that's being said, then my understanding is that some of these foundational ego architectures are started when we're kids. Say between, I've heard between the age of 0 and 7. Really early childhood development where we make decisions about us and about how the universe works. And that becomes a foundational pillar by how we operate. And as we become older, 30, 40, 50, 60, et cetera, some of those same foundational decisions are still driving us through our ego in our boardrooms, our conversations with our mates, et cetera, et cetera. So then if all that's true, then my question is, how do we put consciousness to something that is unconscious? How do we how do we get our conscious brain, which is maybe only 10% of what's operating right now, to be able to look at what doesn't want to be seen? And so I have an idea that I want to share with you, but I first want to get your thoughts about how do you bring attention to something that wants to stay hidden?
That's a great question. I'm sure you have many tools that do this as well. You know, but I think it for the work that I do is all about self-awareness, right? You can't change anything you're not aware of. That's what you're talking about. That conscious brain has to become alive. So you have to bring tangible, tactical awareness to what's actually going on. You know, we've all been to, you know, some form of, I shouldn't say that, we haven't all. A lot of people listening to this podcast have probably been some form of coaching or therapy or even mentoring. And people say, oh, you do this. Or even just your family or friends have told you, you know, you kind of suck at this. And, or this is where you get, you know, temperamental, or this is where you hurt my feelings. And people are like, yeah. Well, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to or whatever. And we write it off. And the work that we do in the academy is the first 6 weeks is a deep dive, deep dive into self-awareness that says, hey, this is how you're showing up. It's not my perspective. It's the world around you perspective. And this is your self-awareness around it, because there's a tool that I use that actually shows the actual self-awareness around their current impact. So it's a 360 that shows them exactly where they fall, exactly, you know, how they think they're showing up versus how other people see them showing up. And so there's no denying it, right? You now have a black and white visual that says, this is how you're showing up. You can choose to change it. Nothing on here is permanent. Nothing on here says you're good or bad or ugly. It is just what it is. And you can choose to empower yourself to make a different choice. And through that, it transitions from self-awareness to now ownership. Ownership of these traits, these qualities, the old school mindsets and beliefs that are serving us to a some degree and hurting us to another. You know, the protector that protects us and creates boundaries and says, hey, that person is dangerous, that serves us. But when it starts to get old, and when we give it a platform as the older we get, it starts to protect us from the good people too. And that's when we start to keep everybody too far away or everybody on their own island. And so recognizing where are those old stories now becoming part of your lack of success story, or you're at the top of your game. You know, most people I work with, they're executives, they're leaders. These are people that have gotten to an incredibly successful place in life. But there's a point where even that level, if you haven't identified your ego, you're still not maximizing your impact. You're still not maximizing your success. Because there's this unconscious part of you that is reacting or communicating in a way that's not as effective as it could be.
Isn't the number one goal of the controller, complier, and protector is self-preservation?
Absolutely. The ego is self-preservation.
Is to keep it going. It's the mechanism that we might say is like, in so in some ways, I've noticed this, and sometimes when I've talked to a client, and we're having a conversation and I might give them some sort of a feedback and it gets right to the core of what is going on. I get right past the veil and into the actual ego and call it out. And what I've noticed sometimes is that people all of a sudden just kind of get confused. Like they have to ask the question again. Like, what did you say? Like they all of a sudden just go dark. Like the computer just shut down. And when I'm saying, the reason why you can't hear this is because your ego doesn't want to hear this. The ego's job is not to be seen. It's to hide.
Yeah.
And it will work. And it, the interesting thing is, it's also listening in on this conversation.
Yeah.
So it will find a way to justify what we are talking about as being unreal later.
Absolutely.
To start to unpack this. Okay. So here's
a thought. Well, it manipulates reality too, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's the one thing about ego. Every time someone comes into, you know, the first day of an academy or even the first few weeks, like, oh yeah, I know someone that does that. And I always say, as soon as I hear that, I guarantee almost 90% of the time that person does that trait too. But the ego doesn't want to see it. We reflect so much of the things that we judge that other people do. It might look slightly different. It might sound slightly different. But when we judge it and when we point it out, most of the time, it's a reflection of something we're doing and we do not have conscious awareness around it.
So say that again.
So
you're talking about the reflection of ourselves as showing up in others.
Yes. Yeah. And so what happens a lot of times, you know, when people start to do this ego work, it's really easy to point out someone else's ego and see like, oh, yeah, they are passive aggressive all the time. Oh, yeah, they overwork too much. Oh, yeah, they're really not a nice person. Or my favorite right now is everybody's a narcissist, right? In our world, we've got narcissists everywhere.
Right.
Well, really, narcissists at a strength, if we look at everything as a strength and a weakness, a narcissist at a strength is just confident in their self, right? Now, when that ego overuses confidence, it can turn into a narcissist or turn into something very negative, mean, and too intense. And so obviously there's medical stuff that goes with that one. But my point is that we could really identify ego traits in just about everything that we point out in others right now. And most likely there's some level, some degree, we do those same things. Look at our parents. We all despise something our parents do. Let's be honest in how our parents show up, how they communicate. We love them dearly, and we also have their best and worst traits inside of us.
Right.
And usually when we don't recognize the worst traits in ourselves yet, we will just get so annoyed. You know, if your mom, my mom, I love her. She is an overcarer, overgiver, overlover. And when she starts to do things, it's funny because I'll get super annoyed. Mom, just make a boundary and don't do that anymore. And say no, you're overgiving right now. And then I'll catch myself doing the same thing a week later with someone else in my world, right? And so it's knowing when are you pointing out someone else's ego, because you have that same ego that one, you either haven't identified yet, or two, you've learned to manage it and now you're judging them for not managing it.
Ergo, we hate and love characteristics of other people that we hate and love about ourselves.
Yes.
And it's like, so if you were to get into a practical standpoint, I'm a manager within a company, my boss frustrates the crap out of me. I think he or she is what, call it a narcissist, egomaniac, whatever. Not to say that there are many other steps, but first step might be is what part of me is that? What part of me is triggered because of that? And what's that about? Yes, I still might need to have a conversation. Yes, I still might need to fire somebody with poor behavior. All the other things are still true. But first and foremost is be self-aware about why does this bother me?
Yeah.
And what does it say about myself that I'm being caused to re-stimulate something that might be hidden?
Absolutely. And that's that ownership part, right? If we don't ever do the ownership part and we just do the self-awareness work, then we can be self-aware of our weaknesses all day, every day, but we're not owning them. And the ego is what prevents us from owning them. So when you can take it to that next level and take ownership now in real time, that conversation you just had about your boss, right? Like that's when you can actually say, okay, maybe my boss is a narcissist, but maybe I've never actually stood up to him and questioned what he's asking to do. Or maybe I've never, you know, ask him why he's wanting us to do that approach if it's not going to serve X, Y, and Z. And so again, I think a lot of times if you're a complier, narcissists typically fall into the protector category. And so if you're a complier and you work for a protector, most likely you're complying. You're not speaking truth. You're not showing up. You're not giving your feedback. You're not bringing your value to the table. So this, what's called the narcissist protector, is just walking all over because they got the right answer. So they're just telling you what to do in a very probably black and white tone.
Right.
Even if it's unintentional, it's probably not coming across in their head as intense. And so that's where recognizing the different egos on your team really allows you to recognize how do you respond to those other egos that makes you not show up as your best self, so that you can manage a narcissist a little easier in your life. You can manage a controller a little easier or a complier.
So a couple of weeks ago, I had a team of executives and we walked them through an exercise where you probably have heard something similar to this, where we asked them to do a timeline of their life from the moment they were born to today and make notes on this flip chart piece of paper of the key situations and events in their life that really made them who they are today. So that was sort of like our way of getting our toe in the water. And then to get our leg in the water, we went, okay, let's come back to this same list of these different things. Let's share it to the degree that you feel comfortable. Now, I want you to go back to a few of the early ones and what decisions did you make at that time when you were a child, say, for example, about how life works, about how you work. And so then they were able to identify that. And then we were able to kind of, now we got a whole leg in the water. Now we're going to take another step into this later and go, what sort of triggers that were caused by that event that are still playing out today? And so now they're able to bring their own behavior into this conversation. And then they got feedback from the other team members to say, yeah, we can see that. We can see that showing up, and then provide them, you know, support. Like, you don't need to be overprotective, or we've got your back. We understand that. And what was interesting was that it brought all of this unconscious stuff to light and all sorts of support that was never known was there, and a call for the whole person to show up, not just those that were within a small band of behavior. And I guess I'm curious from your standpoint, your thoughts on that process, but two, what other ways have you been able to help your clients get to those long-standing triggers that are hidden by our conscious mind, but that still dominate a majority of our negative behavior?
I love that activity. That activity is so powerful, especially in a group. One of the, like you said, once you see it happen in a group, you start to normalize everybody's life, right? Like all the good, bad,
nobody's
and ugly
stuff. Nobody's the freak
here. We all have had clammy stuff happen, right?
Yes.
Absolutely. Most of our stories look very similar, just with different characters and different topics. And so I think, one, normalizing it, because then we're no longer judging it. So when you can normalize it like that, get to the root, then normalize it, now just get curious. Once you have a level of self-awareness and ownership, you can get really curious about why. Why do I do that? And that's how you uncover those belief systems and those mindsets in those moments. And then when you start to see it in real time, my favorite is when you get that, and I'm sure you see this all the time with your clients, is when they get that first aha, like, oh, I saw it happen. Oh my gosh, I really didn't think I was doing that. And it just happened. And this is what happened. This is how I felt. And this is what the other person responded with. And I use these three words that we've talked about, you know, really just that why. The bigger why. Why am I doing that? Why am I responding that way? Why do I feel this way? Why does this matter? And then asking yourself that next level, right? So that's step one, self. But then the next level is, why does this matter to the other person?
Yeah.
Why does this matter to the company? Why does this matter to the team? Why is this mattering to the impact I'm creating? And now you've created empathy. So you have ownership and self-awareness around yourself. Then you can empathize with the other perspective around the situation at such a bigger level. And I would say the bigger why you get, when you can get it, you know, three or four or five steps away from you, there's no longer a personal attachment. This is not personal. This is just your belief that accidentally or unintentionally imposed on somebody else. And now it had this trickle-down effect that impacted decisions and actions and results. And if you just step back to that initial perspective and say, why did I do that? And then take ownership and say, hey guys, I'm sorry. And allow that vulnerability and that confidence, authentic confidence, not the ego confidence, come into play and just, you know, be real and be authentic and say, hey, we screwed up. We need to backtrack. How many leaders do you hear just say, hey, time out. We're five steps ahead and this isn't working. We need to go back to square one and I will take ownership that I made the first wrong move. That's when you can really see that change and that shift. But, you know, like you said, it's one leg, one toe at a time, one leg at a time, one body at a time.
Yeah, right. It's almost like we're sneaking up on a deer, you know, like the ego doesn't want to be seen. So we have to take these little small steps and hand a carrot and all of a sudden we've got them. But it takes time and it takes effort because I think if you come to people and blow them out of the water too quickly, the ego goes, danger, danger, Will Robinson, and they back off into the fold. and we can't pull them out again. Yeah, this is, I think,
the other thing about on that too, just to add to that, is, you know, the ego changes with us. It's not standard. It's not same ego throughout life, right? And so I would tell my clients, okay, you've been doing this work for 6 months. You got that one figured out, but you better get your radar back on. Don't get comfortable and get back into that unconscious mindset, because you've got all the tools in place and it's been managed for a while. What it does is it changes with you and it starts getting smarter. I mean, I've been doing this work for 12, 15 years now. I'm sure you are in the same boat. My ego still shows up and it looks different and sounds different about every quarter. Like, oh, wait, where did that thing come from? So, you know, I think it's not thinking like, oh, I just want to fix the problem and then be great. And now I can check that off that I got ego management. Now, ego is with you for the rest of your life. It is part of you. It's, you're good, bad, and ugly. And really, it's just about taking ownership of it throughout your life, throughout all situations.
Yeah, I think it's great that we, to almost create a separate character in our personality, this ego that separates us, like the brain from the mind. You know, there is a difference here that we can actually use the brain to control the brain, right? It almost feels like it's a, how is that possible, right? But I think maybe the human beings, I think, are the only ones that can actually have this sort of sense of self-awareness, but be able to say, oh, isn't that interesting that showed up again? That trigger just happened. And I can analyze my own reaction while I'm having the reaction. It's almost an out-of-body experience, but I think that's important.
Absolutely.
And I think you probably do this with your clients too, is especially when others are triggered and we are in the presence of that, or we are working through conflict, which is sometimes a conflict between two egos, get re-stimulating these childhood mindsets that keep getting played out that we don't consciously know, is to language this around my interpretation around what you said versus assigning the fact of what they said and their intention, because we don't know what their intention is. Seems to be a way of at least owning maybe our own ego's existence without assigning blame to anybody else. Like, oh, all right, here's the deal. My interpretation is this is what happened. And I got all upset. I got flamed out and I'm now whatever, you know, hooked. And that's the one of the ways I think that we can bring out awareness around something that its job is to try to keep hit.
Absolutely. I mean, the blame game is the number one sign that an ego's in the room, right? When you start pointing a finger at someone else, guarantee there's an ego in the room, because the reality is we all play a part. So that's the first question I ask when we're in a group of people and there's conflict and someone starts saying, well, we screwed this up, or this is what happened, or this is why we shouldn't have done that. Well, let's talk about that. What is your part? You know, how often do you hear a manager say, oh, my team's just not accountable? Okay, well, what's your part? Once we can figure out our own part, whether, again, it's 1%, 25%, 47%, 99%, you cannot take 100% of everything, because that's just not realistic either, right? So what's your part? Where could you have showed up differently? If we can change how we show up, we can change our own approach. We can then change the response and the reactions of other people, which changes their approach. And that's really the power of conscious and intentional leadership in general, right? And so I think that's ego management at its finest. Recognize your part, take ownership, and now you have a completely different conversation. Like, it just doesn't even go down that ugly path. And if it does, you can catch it, because, again, there's ownership.
Yep. I had a conversation just yesterday with somebody, and she, based on your model, was definitely a complier, wanting to be liked, very empathetic, and was working with somebody, I don't know whether they were protector, or I think probably protector, what one might say the worst case scenario of somebody who, you know, is really into truth and calling out the issues of other people. And what I noticed is that this complier was working so hard on her ability to work with this other person that it became evident that she could no longer do anything else. There was no solution. The best solution was to back away, not to continue to push on a string. And so the other thing that I wanted just to call out here is that sometimes people can be very successful in receiving some mentorship and some coaching from people like yourself, right? And they can identify these hidden different egos and own them and move forward with them, knowing it's a constant process. There are others, I do believe, that much different kind of work is needed, where one might say some level of therapy that is so strongly Like the chains and the barriers around these egos are so tight that it's right. that it's near impossible for an external person to say the right thing. And I wanted just to call that out, that everything you're saying, I completely honor and agree with. And sometimes, myself included, you don't need me. You need a therapist.
Yes.
With all due respect.
Absolutely. 100%. Yeah. I mean, this is mind work, right? And so
yes.
you have to be in a mental headspace to say, I want to address this. I want
right.
to choose a new
Good
way.
Point.
And sometimes we're not there, and that's
yeah.
okay too. And I make that known at every workshop or before we start with a new academy is, hey, this is going to trigger you. Like, my work is designed to trigger you. My intention is to trigger you. If I'm not triggering you, you're not present.
Great way of setting that up. Yeah.
Yeah, because it is, right? Like, if you don't get to viscerally feel your ego in a safe space, then one, I'm not doing my job, so I need to give you a refund. And two,
Good
you're
deal.
Not going to ever get to really feel what it's going to feel like in real time. And so with that being said, if you do have some old wounds that need more of that therapy space, I encourage people to, we can do them hand in hand. A lot of clients that do therapy and coaching hand in hand because they do work together, right? We talk about old mindsets and beliefs. Coaching is about moving forward from those. Therapy is about digging into those. And
yeah.
so through this ego work, a lot of times people will identify things that they've never been able to identify with their therapist because it was just so black and white in your face the way it was approached in these boardrooms that then they can go to their therapist and say, hey, I need to dig here. And so, you know, it does go hand in hand, and people do have to be ready for this work. This is not, you know, light work. This is not just someone going to pat you on the back and say you're doing a good job. And I think it is work for everyone. Everyone can benefit from this work if they are ready to choose to take ownership and find a little more peace in their world.
Yeah. And again, I totally agree with you on this. And that whatever one does not necessarily mean that others will change. To your
Correct.
Point early on, you might have one person all of a sudden get conscious in a room, and it may very well stimulate more consciousness in the room. And sometimes that doesn't happen. Sometimes, in fact, the conscious person actually triggers the unconscious person even more. You know,
yeah.
like, I don't want to be seen. You know, you're scaring
yeah.
the crap out of me. Back off, you know, and therefore.
That's true.
And we have to realize that we can't be irresponsible for that person's reaction, if we can only be responsible for our own. Christy, this is really great work. I just, I really think that you have a unique, deep, important perspective on development that I don't see a lot of. And I just want to encourage people to connect with you. What ways can they? This is your chance to give us a little sales pitch, so let her rip.
Well, my company is called Mindful Choice, so they can go to mindfulchoiceacademy.com, find me there and reach out. Love to always, you know, good old-fashioned phone calls and emails, so please reach out personally. LinkedIn, Instagram, all those things. I do run a Mindful Choice Leadership Academy, both for organizations and individuals. I do executive coaching. I'm actually getting ready to start a new group. I haven't started kind of this inner circle mastermind. So it's going to be called the Mindful Choice Success Alliance. And this is going to be for founders, business owners, entrepreneurs, anybody who's looking for just, you know, that peer advisory group with some deep dive into coaching and really maximizing your success if you're a fast growing company. So that'll be starting. I'm recruiting coming this next month. So
virtual,
in that
face to face on that.
It's virtual. Yep.
So people can
yep.
connect with you, then have a cohort experience. Over Zoom.
Exactly.
Okay, got it. Wonderful.
Yeah.
Christy, great work. I hope you have a wonderful holiday. I know when we are recording this, it's you know, right before Christmas. I think when this goes live, we're sometime at the end of February. But I do wish you the best, and let's definitely stay in touch.
Thank you very much, Dean. I would love to keep in touch.
Thank you for listening to The Business of Intuition. If you enjoyed the show, please subscribe, rate, and review on Apple Podcasts, Google, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. If you'd like to learn more about Dean or Mission Facilitators Leadership, go to mfileadership.com. That's mfileadership.com.